Today I want to talk about a very challenging, difficult subject. It can be very painful, but there is a positive story when it's all said and done. I want to talk about the downcast spirit. We're going to be talking about depression today, which is becoming an enormous problem here in the United States. America has the highest teen suicide rate in the world. It's getting even worse. When I was younger, you didn't come across suicide that often. I did have a real good friend of mine in the neighborhood. He had a sister. I was about 11 or 12. He had a sister who was 15. She got pregnant. And there was a weapon in the home. There was a rifle. And she got a hold of the rifle and killed herself because she was pregnant. And I think it was just difficult for her to handle that back then. This was in the early 70s. And it was very sad, very shocking to everybody because I had never come across suicide before. When I was growing up, I never thought of suicide, never crossed my mind. I had some bad days. I think all of us can remember some bad days in our lives, or you get very depressed or very down or discouraged, or maybe the future looks bleak, but it was not a subject discussed. I didn't know of anyone else who committed suicide. But suicide is very much part of the discussion with teenagers and young adults. Since coming to the church and as the years progress and Christ has not returned, you find more and more people having to deal with depression. You even have young children dealing with depression, which is a great tragedy. We live in Babylon. We live in a crazy society. Enormous pressures on our kids and on other adults. We come from a world where many people come out of broken homes. We have many people who never had the wonderful experience of having a loving, caring father. And yes, often, not always, and I don't want to stereotype this, please. This is important not to stereotype this. But you do find, in general, higher rates of depression and extreme depression among people who did not have that father-son or father-daughter relationship. Winston Churchill was a good example of that. He struggled with what was called the black dog of depression. I told you before, sorry for repeating this, but if you haven't heard the story, Churchill said on a number of occasions that when he was going through his black dog moments, when he would go to the railway station, he didn't want to stand too close to the tracks because of the temptation to thrust himself in front of a train. Abraham Lincoln struggled greatly with depression. We're going to have a handout. As a matter of fact, you can start to hand those things out right now. We got two handouts for you today. Many of you on the telephone hookup, we sent an email to you with this image of Churchill and Abraham Lincoln. You just take a look at Abraham Lincoln. And it's rare to see Abraham Lincoln without seeing a countenance of sadness, of overwhelm. He had a very difficult life. His mother died young. He had an okay relationship with his father. And again, I don't want to stereotype that. Just because a person had a bad relationship with their father doesn't mean they're going to be enslaved to chronic depression for the rest of their life. That is not true. There are people who came from intact families, had a wonderful father, and still have to deal with depression. But we come out of this world, which increasingly is filled with broken relationships. And I think that is often one of the root causes of damage in people's relationships or in life itself. And it opens the door to depression. Because if you have a broken marriage, if you have a broken relationship with your father or your mother, if your grown children don't talk to you, that does a lot of damage to human beings. We're humans. God made us having the need to have other human beings in our lives. And when there's stress and fallouts and tempers and broken relationships and people don't talk to one another, or when you do get together for Thanksgiving and everybody's fighting, it wears people down. God intended people to be close, to forgive quickly, to get over things quickly. And when all of that goes to pieces, sure, it creates depression. I know probably one of the biggest areas where I've had to struggle with discouragement, the downcast spirit and depression, is just what has happened to the greater church family. Split after split, good friends that I've known of who don't talk to one another within the context of the church, I hate to hear when churches split, even though I might have my own personal disagreements over doctrine or the way they're governed or something like that. I do not like hearing when a church separates, because I know the absolute chaos that ensues and the pressure that falls upon members and family members and friendships and all of that strain. I hate that. Satan loves the downcast spirit because he will use it to paralyze us. He'll use it to create all types of distortions in our own minds about life, friendships, people, where it can get to a point, and I'm sure most of you have gone through this at some point in time, where you're just so discouraged. It's very difficult to function. It's hard to be productive at work. It's difficult to express your love to your spouse or your children. It's debilitating, and it's perhaps Satan's most subtle weapon, and it may be his most effective weapon. So we're going to talk about it today. I hope to make this a two-part sermon. I don't have all the answers, though the scripture gives us an awful lot in terms of wisdom and guidance and how to deal with it and how to function through, because most of us, and I say 99% of us, are going to have to deal with it to some degree in our lives. You need to equip your children to deal with this. I was talking with somebody here recently, I won't mention his name, but you have to have a strategy to deal with it. You have to have a game plan. You have to have tools. And your kids are going to have to face it. And they probably do to some extent because of the craziness that goes on in the school systems, the incredible focus in our society on body image and success and how that is defined. It's horrific. Pick up a magazine, if you can, that doesn't show an array of, sorry to put it this way, skinny girls. And it's constant. And I'm a man, I don't think about it that much, but I can tell you, your girls will have to deal with that constant thrusting in their face. That you got to be about 5'7 or 5'8 or 5'9 and weigh about 119 to 130 pounds, which is ridiculous. That's absurd. That isn't God's way. They're all different body types and so on, but this is just one of the little ways that Satan can get to us. Remember, it's his society. Men, too, struggle from depression for different reasons. It's a bit of an epidemic in our society, and it is Satan's society, and as Satan's world becomes worse and worse, people are going to have to struggle with this more and more. Everybody's going to have to battle with this. The way I fight it and the way you fight it will be different. Some people, depression is a 2 or 3 day battle from time to time. Other people, it may be within a year, they may have a bad month or two. With some people, it's just constantly there in the background in varying degrees. Everybody's different. The way you battle through it is different. But God gives us ideas on how to deal with it. He can actually use depression for a season to work with us, to make us more compassionate with others. Remember, we're being trained for leadership positions in the kingdom of God. And especially in those early years of the millennium, you're going to have a lot of depressed people. You'll have the kingdom of God, yes, but people will have gone through literal hell. Their lives are going to be broken. They will have lost loved ones. And a big part of dealing with people, leading people at a very personal level, is dealing with their downcast spirit, helping them through the valleys of discouragement. And God wants us to be compassionate. That's a very important aspect of leadership, to be compassionate with people, but to have wisdom as well in helping people get through depression. There's an old parable, and I always thought this was effective. I'm not much for human parables, but it's about Satan's favorite tool. And it says, once upon a time it was announced that the devil was going out of business. He was going to sell all of his equipment to those who were willing to pay a price. This is a human parable, but it's quite insightful. On the big day of the devil's sale, all of his tools were attractively displayed. One of his tools was envy, another jealousy, hatred was another. Then you have malice, deceit, sensuality, pride. All these tools Satan will use on human beings. Even idolatry, there are other implements of his evil on display. Each of the tools was marked with its own price tag. Over in the corner by itself was a harmless-looking, wedged-shaped tool, very much worn down. But still, it bore a higher price than any of the other tools. It was very high in price. Someone asked the devil what it was, and he answered, "That tool is called discouragement." The next question came quickly, "And why is it priced so high, even though it is plain to see that it is more worn than all the others?" And the devil replied, "Because this tool is more useful to me than all these others. I can pry open and get into a man or a woman's heart with this tool, and I can get closer to him using this tool more so than using any other tool." So much truth to that. That Satan, maybe he can't get to you through covetousness or lust or greed or extreme anger or pride or idolatry, but it's amazing how subtly he can work in a person's life through the instrument of discouragement and depression to the degree where a person becomes so paralyzed they no longer produce fruit. Satan doesn't want you to produce fruit. And if he can tie you up, distort your thinking by becoming discouraged and depressed, regardless of what it is, whether it's family background issues, whether it goes back to your childhood, whether it's the loss of a job, health issues, a broken relationship, a divorce. I've always thought going through a divorce must be one of the most distressful, difficult trials a person could go through. To have an intimate relationship with somebody, physically and emotionally, and then have children, and then years later go through a divorce must be devastating. I've heard it said that you never truly recover from a divorce, that there's always a little bit of wound there, however small. I don't know. I haven't been through it. Hope I would never experience that. But people endure a lot in this life. A lot of people in the church who go through a divorce didn't want the divorce. But circumstances, or because of their spouse's behavior, drug issues and so on, and people have to go through some of these tragedies in life. The death of someone you deeply love can be devastating. God knows all of this. Getting back to the parable, "And the devil said, 'This tool is more useful to me than any other.' Once I get inside the human being," remember, Satan wants to get inside our minds, he can use that. Depression is extreme low-level energy mentally and emotionally. You all know what I'm talking about. Even teenagers know what I'm talking about. Where you're just so low, it's just difficult to sometimes get through the day or to deal with the challenges of life. He said, "It is worn well because I use it on everybody I can. And few people even know it belongs to me. So the tool was priced so high that no one could buy it. And to this day, it has never been sold." And then we have a photograph for those of you on the internet or on the telephone hookup. I wasn't able to get this out to you. I can do this later, but I thought a very effective image of a woman obviously overcome with discouragement and depression. And did you know that American women lead the world in rates of depression? Something about our culture and our society that just beats up women. Again, I get back to the broken relationship theory, though I think it's more than a theory. Troublesome marriages, broken marriages, trying to raise kids on their own, this rotating sexual partner society, which does enormous damage to people and their psyches. And of course, there's a lot more to it than that, but I do think that is probably the biggest factor. People have different ways of getting away from it, which is not wrong. We'll talk about that today. There are some human things we can do that are biblically sound and not wrong. Churchill loved to paint. He suffered from the black dog severely, even into his adult life. I read this week that Churchill wrote more than Shakespeare. And there was another British author, was it Chaucer, one of the famous British authors. He wrote more than the two of those people combined. He was a prolific writer. One of the ways he dealt with depression was to go outside. He liked the outdoors, sit, paint landscapes in the background, and he found it enormously therapeutic to give his mind rest. It is key to mastering or navigating your way through depression. And you got to find out what works for you. For some people, it's reading a novel. For another person, it may be going shopping. And your children see the way you deal with depression. They notice these things. My mom loved gardening. We had about an acre of land, and whenever she was a little bit down, she would go out into the garden and she would get her hands in the dirt. And she would often say to me, "You've got to get your hands in the dirt. You never get your hands in the dirt." Well, that doesn't inspire me. When I'm down, I have the blues, I've got the black dog today. I'm not a go off to the garden and put your hands in the dirt kind of person. But everybody's different. My father, the way he handled it, they didn't have major bouts of it, but of course they had their moments. He would do other things. People are different. We'll talk about that. I do think when you take a look at this subject, you have to take a look at the good old American diet, which is filled with sugar, high carbohydrate, all types of chemicals in the diet. Yes, I absolutely believe diet may not be the factor, but it contributes to the blues, downcast, ups and downs, extreme emotions. We are the highest sugar diet-oriented nation in the world. Us in Mexico, we're the high carbohydrate people. And you're up, you're down. And by the way, ladies, it is a fact that a higher sugar diet, the more carb diet in general, I know I'm not a doctor, but there's just too much evidence out there, wreaks havoc on your hormones. And yes, I do believe in postpartum depression. That is very real. A lot of men make fun of it. When a woman goes through pregnancy and gives all this nutrition to the baby and goes through that incredible process of carrying a baby and then giving birth, which of course few men would go through themselves if somehow that could happen. They wouldn't. Are you kidding me? I wouldn't go through that. And then they go through it 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times. They have to be insane or in love. Or maybe that's the way God made them. But that sucks a lot out of a person. I'm just simply saying the American diet doesn't feed the brain. I think we all lack, to some degree, serotonin. We all probably have some degree thyroid issues and adrenal issues. And all of this plays into moods and depression and hormones. You never want to underestimate that. I know I'm not a doctor, but the evidence out there is just enormous. And it's piling up all the time. Let's get into the subject because God cares about us. You have to battle through it. And there are scriptures about it, which are very, very important. So let's go to 1 Kings chapter 19 as we take a look at this. And again, it's a two-part sermon, 1 Kings chapter 19. It is wonderful to have a good mental energy, to be able to face the challenges in life and the grind of life and the trials of life, but have a certain mental and emotional energy. But when you're depressed, you don't have that mental and emotional energy. And life can seem absolutely overwhelming. And you get less done. It's a vicious cycle. You feel bad because you're not getting as much done. You're not giving as much time to your kids, to your spouse, maybe even to the church. And it's very serious. Herbert Armstrong had to go through periods of depression. He talks about that a lot in his coworker letters. You don't see that as much in the autobiography. But interesting how he dealt with it. Everybody has their own way. Elijah, one of the strongest people ever in terms of human strength, because to a degree we're talking about a mental health, mental strength issue here. And I don't mean that as a put down, because just because you have the blues or you're down, it doesn't mean you're mentally unfit or you're lacking somehow. Everybody has to deal with this in varying degrees in different ways. And Elijah was one of the strongest men in all of human history in terms of just God's Spirit working in him in a powerful way. A great calling, close to God, yet he went through this incredible valley of depression after he defeated the false prophets of Baal. And then he had to deal with Jezebel, who was seeking to take his life. He goes through this deep valley. I don't know how long it lasted. Could have been weeks or perhaps a month or more easily. Jezebel goes after him. She wants to kill him. He needs to flee. So he runs in verse 3, 1 Kings 19, and he ran for his life. Verse 4, he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat under a broom tree and prayed that he might die. Sometimes it can go to that extreme. He wasn't going to commit self-harm here, but you know, as you reach adulthood, there are going to be some days you say, it would be okay if I didn't wake up in the morning, because it can be that difficult. Mr. Armstrong had a period of time back, probably 47, 48, 49, where he went through a number of experiences when he was trying to solidify the college, the money problems, incredible stress, where he would pray to God that he wouldn't wake up the following morning. This is where Elijah was. And he lay and he slept under a broom tree. Suddenly an angel touched him and said to him, "Arise and eat." Interesting. Now, God is very concerned about us. I'm using this story as an example because he loves us just as much as he loved Elijah, and he cares about you. And some of you are not going through depression right now. Life is pretty much okay. That's good. There's a time for that. There's a season to enjoy those wide open spaces and the green pastures and kind of rejuvenate and recalibrate. Those are wonderful times. But there are others in the congregation. You're going through heavy seas, gray skies, heavy winds, storms, and trials, and you're weighted down, and you're just a human, and it's hard, and life can be very dark, but God took care of him. This is touching. In verse 7, and the angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him. Arise and eat, because the journey is too great for you. God's concerned. And he knows there are times when the trials of life are so great for you. And maybe something that has hit you, a job issue, a health issue, a broken relationship, moving. We're little human beings. These things impact us greatly. Sometimes I think we like to think we're strong. We're really not. One of the great lessons of the Bible, humans just aren't strong. Relying on God creates a totally different dynamic. Then there's a strength that comes because God's Spirit is involved. We see his hand. Nothing will pull you out of a depression quicker than seeing God's hand in your life. It's enormously encouraging. It could be a little thing, a small answer to prayer, a turning of the corner. But when you see God's hand in your life, nothing, and I mean nothing, you know this from experience, can ignite that fire again in you and can strengthen you deep in the core of the inner man. But God will use depression not only to make us better leaders in the future, but to drive us to our knees. There's a good outcome to depression because when we're depressed, we need to draw closer to God. That's difficult because you're depressed. You've had the experience. You're just depressed and down. And when you're depressed and down, you don't have the energy to read the Bible. You don't have the energy to want to pray. You're just down. It's tough. And Satan doesn't want you going to your knees when you're depressed. But he's always at work in the background. Remember, he's going to use depression to keep you off your knees, to keep you away from studying the Bible. And I remember Mr. Armstrong talking on another occasion where he said he was down, he was depressed, and the weeks went by without him hardly praying at all. That's what depression can do to us. But you can see here, there's a great turning point. In Elijah's life, God works with him. As a matter of fact, in cases of extreme depression, if you read the Bible, you will often see major change comes when God starts to work with a person through the process of depression, where all of a sudden life takes a very different turn eventually, usually more than a few days. It may take a few weeks or a period of a few months going through a terrible time of despondency. But then out of that experience, a person has a new life. Take a look at Hannah in 1 Samuel chapters 1 and 2, where for years she could not have a baby, was terribly discouraged because she could not have a baby, something a man will never understand. But eventually she goes through a terrible period of great discouragement. It reaches its crest, as it sometimes needs to take place. She goes to God, prays diligently, makes a vow. You don't have to make a vow, but in this case, she made a vow, and everything changed. There can come a point in time, and often does, when all of a sudden, you know, the dark skies begin to clear, and you see glimpses of the sunlight. It's a wonderful time when that does happen. And certainly, we can look to God to make that happen. Elijah's in the bowels of it. In verse 8, it says, he arose, and he ate, and he drank, he went in the strength of that food for 40 days and 40 nights, he went to Horeb, the mountain of God, but he's still depressed. And there he went into a cave, and he spent the night in that place. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him. And he said to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" Well, isn't it interesting when we're depressed? What do we normally do? We withdraw from people, don't we? Some people get so bad they don't want to get out of bed in the morning. Or they'll go days and days and days sleeping 12, 14, 16 hours a day because depression robs you of all energy. But be careful there because Satan wants us to be isolated from other people. He wants you not to have any hope. But God lovingly says, and this is Jesus Christ saying, what are you doing here, Elijah? So Christ is with him. He's going to work with him. He goes through this almost like a processor as he works through the depression and helps him to come out of the depression. In verse 10, Elijah says, I've been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the children of Israel. Israel has forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed the prophets. I alone am left. He's angry. You often find anger within the depression because, you know, sorry to put it in such crude terms, but life stinks. We all go through periods of time. It's just life stinks. But God brings him out of that, but he has to express it. It's important to express it to God. Sometimes you just have to pour out your soul to him completely. He knows what you're going through anyway. It's wonderful, too, if you can have a friend. We'll talk about that later. A lot of people don't even have a friend they can talk to when they're depressed. God intended friendship to be able to help and nurture those who are depressed. Elijah, you know, you almost wonder, did Elijah have any friends? Later on, Elisha comes into the picture. I think that was an encouragement to Elijah. You get a sense of a man very much alone, very close to God, but very much alone. And he has to voice it, you know, because you're discouraged and there's anger mixed in. It's understandable. God isn't going to condemn you. Verse 11, and then he said, go out and stand on the mountain of the Lord. He goes out. And the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore into the mountain. So strong it tore the rocks into pieces. But the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. Incredible display of power. It had to frighten Elijah. But the Lord was not in the fire. But after the fire, there was a still small voice. It is interesting that sometimes God brings you out of the depression slowly, maybe with that still small voice or that little miracle, that just that little small thing that takes place, a change in context, something happens, God brings something into your life. Maybe all of a sudden you just have a surge of more energy. You look at things a little bit more positively. God will work in a smaller way initially. Going through depression, so don't always expect immediate dramatic results within a 24-hour period of time, though that can happen. God will work the way he chooses to work, and he works with people differently. This is very important to understand. The way God works with you as a female is probably going to be very different as to the way God works with a man. The way God may work with me to help bring me out of those heavy days or those dark skies may be a little bit different than the way he works with you because we're different human beings. We have different needs. We have different hopes and dreams, and we're all in a little bit of a different context. So don't try to get your spouse, pull them out of the depression necessarily the way you get out of the depression. It doesn't work that way. It does not work that way. Many people care about their children or the spouse, but then they try to kind of get them to go through a process that doesn't work for them. Obviously, you know, some advice is good in any context. Verse 13, so when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face. He came out, stood at the entrance of the cave. Suddenly a voice came to him and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? Now, Elijah went there. It is interesting what people do when they're depressed. I told you the story before. I remember a woman telling me, she said, when I get depressed, I go through 1 to 2 gallons of ice cream in a day, and I watch movies for 2 or 3 days straight. I don't know, not the way I deal with it. We're different. I'm not saying that's some horrible sin. People are different. People try to recalibrate in different ways. Elijah wanted to just get away. And then again, he says, I've been very diligent. And notice what God does. Well, first, let's go to verse 14. Elijah says, I alone am left. not really true. You see, depression distorts the mind. Life is not always as bad as you think it is, but you're so down, it's very hard to see that reality. I once heard it put, and it was so effective to put it this way, depression lies. Fears, brokenheartedness, a lot of that can become just kind of expanded in our minds. But remember, God is always there. He's always willing to give that helping hand. He will always strengthen you. But sometimes we get so depressed, we can forget that. We know it's true, but you're just depressed and you forget that. But you have to look for it. Nothing is to be taken for granted. You have to reach out. You have to be very consistent in the reaching out as well. And then he says, I alone am left, and they seek to take my life, which was true. Verse 15, the Lord said to him, notice what's interesting. There was not a lot of discussion here. I know in the world of psychology, and I'm not always saying this is wrong, endless therapy sessions at $100 to $150 per hour. Not saying that there isn't a time for lengthy discussion. Sometimes we do need to vent. That is important. That's part of the process often. We need to go to God especially and just talk and literally pour out our hearts to Him. But it's interesting how quickly God moves Elijah into action. And He gives Elijah a task. He gives Elijah something to do, which was very effective in pulling Elijah out of the depression. In a sense, God said, look, I need you to do something. Let's get to work. Let's go. I have something for you to do. Very effective in helping Elijah. We'll talk about this later on. And the Lord said to him, verse 15, go return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. And verse 16, also you shall anoint Jehu, the son of Nimshi, as king over Israel. And Elisha, not Elijah, but Elisha you shall anoint, the son of Shaphat, to help. Notice how God puts another human being into his life. This is very interesting. God will often help you out a depression through another human being, their words, their encouragement, a friendship. Remember, and I believe completely and totally, that when it came to King David, who went through deep, long-lasting spells of depression for about 10 years on and off when he was fleeing from Saul, you just have to read the Psalms to get that. It's quite evident. Who is in David's life? A man called Jonathan. A man who David says was closer than a brother. Loved Jonathan. His love for Jonathan was a love greater than for women. Sad, David apparently never really had a deep, close relationship with a wife. I think they were rather shallow. You know, you have 8, 10 wives. I don't think you're going to have a lot of depth going for you, are you? It's not what God intended. Ruth was a great friend to Naomi. And so you'll see this at time. In the scriptures, we see that the Apostle Paul was given somebody called Timothy, who was like a son unto him, because he didn't have a family. We know he had a sister and so on, but in terms of his work, Titus, we're going to see, was a friend. God will often use another human being to enter into your life to help strengthen you through those heavy seas. God knows exactly what He's doing. He made us to be people-oriented. He made us to be people-oriented, but I know sometimes when the person is depressed, they've been discouraged by people or people have hurt them, then they don't trust any human being. They close the doors to all other human beings, but that's not God's way. So God encourages him. I won't read the rest of the story, but I just wanted to introduce what we're talking about today through the story. In the book of Psalms, let's go to the Psalms, Psalms 34. Psalms 34, because I need to get into more of the kind of the guts of this. Let's go to Psalm 34, because I want to talk about the fact that we need to be aware of what's taking place when we're in the storm, because it is a storm when you're depressed, and how Satan does things and how God helps us. We need to be looking for God's help. You're just a human being. You're not going to get out of the depression for the most part on your own. Especially when you go into a deep depression. But that's not a bad thing in a sense, because it forces us to draw closer to Him. Then when we come out of the depression, we know that God has strengthened us. Beautiful comment here. Psalm 34, verse 18. The Lord is near to those who have a broken heart and saves such as have a crushed spirit. I like that translation. Some translations say contrite, but that's a difficult word for us. I mean, when was the last time somebody said to you, oh, I have a contrite spirit? How do you even define contrite? I prefer crushed, and some translations put it that way. And that's what depression is. Your spirit is crushed for whatever reason. It doesn't matter what the reason is. We're different. Disappointments in jobs, broken human relationships, death of somebody you love, great heavy trial in some way that just hangs and hangs over you. You know what you go through. Verse 19, many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all. Definitely can get us through those periods of brokenheartedness. Very important to understand. So point number one, God will use a season of discouragement to make you a better leader because it develops compassion. It refines your sensitivity to other people, which is very important to God. He wants us to be a compassionate people, but also it drives us to be closer to him. Point number two, just understand when it's all going on and you got these heavy clouds and the rain and it's a cold rain and it's dark, 1 Peter 5 and verse 8, you're dealing with a spirit being who wants to keep you down. He's very effective at keeping people down. He'll put thoughts into your mind. You'll take a look at a trial and everything will become exaggerated in your thinking. It's not that you're given over to high drama, but it's just that way when you're depressed. It just seems whatever the problem is, and it can be a small thing that happens, and it just seems like it's the end of the world. Verse 8, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Resist him. In part two, I'm going to talk more about moods, how God equips us, teaches us how to fight moods. We're a moody culture. We all deal with moods. We get angry, and we stay angry far too long. We become critical, which is a mood. When you think about it, when you're hypercritical, that's a mood. That isn't God's spirit. There's a time to criticize, but when you're hypercritical of your spouse, your kids, or other people, that's a mood that takes over. When people are sad all the time, that's a mood. There are ways to battle those moods, but I will cover that hopefully in the next few weeks as we get into that because the scriptures are very clear. God is not moody. When you're moody, that is not coming from God. It doesn't mean you're possessed by the devil. I don't mean that. Now, there are moods. God is angry, but God gets through his anger quite quickly. That's why he says, don't let the sun go down in your wrath. When God says, forgive quickly, there's a reason for that. Unforgiveness is a mood. It's an attitude that grips the human mind, and it'll stay there sometimes for years with people because of their lack of forgiveness. These are mood issues. Criticism, hyper-cynical. There's a time to be cynical, but God doesn't want you to be predominantly known as a cynical person. That isn't God's spirit. Do you see Jesus Christ constantly cynical? Go through the gospel account. Show me where he's constantly using cynicism in dealing with other people. Our culture is filled with it. I was over in Britain. Boy, do those people love cynicism and put down and jabbing, which is okay. I mean, it can be fun for a while. As I told you before, I worked with the British, and believe me, they can just pummel you, and they're sticking a sword in you every 5 minutes. You dumb American, don't you know? You don't do that. I had a situation one time when I first worked with the British, and he was a good man, a good, strong minister, learned a lot from it and valued the relationship, but I started to work with him, and he would have tea at a certain time. Here we go, the British and tea. Believe me, they take it seriously. So I make the tea, and I pour the tea in the cup. And then I put a little bit of milk after I pour the tea in the cup. And he yells at me. He said, no, you don't do it that way. You put the milk in first. Can't you Americans do anything right? That's the way they are. But they can be great friends. And they're intelligent, funny people and witty. And I enjoy their jousting. And I learn not to take some of those things so personally. But that's their culture. I'm just talking, Satan will use moods. We should never punish the people we love with our moods, okay? If you're down and angry because of something that happened at work, you got to really fight not to bring that home and then snap at your spouse. You see a lot of this in human beings. They punish with moods. I don't see anywhere where God punishes someone with his moods. You show me the scripture where Jesus Christ was in a moody temper and then he punished people with his moods. Don't do that. That isn't coming from God's Spirit. Fight it. Learn to wrestle with it. And it's hard, especially when you live in a context of a family or a marriage and you get annoyed and you're frustrated and you bring a lot of that home. It's hard. Look, it's easy for me to make these comments. I live alone and I can have my little tantrums and spasms and moods and get away with it to a degree at a human level and nobody sees it, right? Your spouse sees you. But I have my little things, you know. I go to the airport and the flight is late or the rental car. Little, stupid, silly things. And I get into a fix over it. That's a subject for a different day, but understand that Satan is there. He wants to massage those angers, the poutings. Oh, America, what happened to our country? We have become a nation of self-pitiers. Everybody's a victim. Everybody. It could be, well, I'm not going to even go into all the different categories, but everybody's a victim. If you're a transgender, you're a victim. If you're gay, you're a victim. If you're a particular race or class, you're a victim. If you're poor or middle class, you're a victim. Everybody's a victim. Just understand that Satan can use that mentality. He's very clever. Okay, I need to go to the next point, which may seem self-evident, but I tell you, it is very important. It's a little thing, and Mr. Armstrong used to talk about this. Everybody needs time to recalibrate, to recharge, to rest. It sounds silly, it sounds trite, but it's very important. It's a physical thing, but the Bible talks about times and seasons. You need to understand this process. Mr. Armstrong, particularly in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, used to go away to Oregon about 3-4 times a year and recalibrate. He didn't stay in an expensive hotel. He and his wife, Loma, would go, and he'd get away for 7 to 10 days, maybe 3 weeks at a time. He'd fast and pray. He'd do a juice fast. It worked for him. It recalibrated him. He was also an individual who, in the evenings, when he got a little bit older, he was a very social man and would have people over for dinner. Then he'd play hearts. Now, most of you aren't going to recalibrate in the evening by playing hearts. But it was a little thing he did. But those little things are very important. You need to have those little things you do where your mind just gets away. It's so important. So, let's go to Mark chapter 6. God is aware of this. He made us to be human beings. The whole concept of rest, I've come to appreciate much more. You got to rest. You got to turn off the whirling mechanism in the mind, whether it be stress or work. It's very hard to do sometimes. We've all had the experience of maybe getting down to pray or study. So hard even to focus or to concentrate. You're so worried. You got so many things rotating in your mind. We live in an overly stimulated society with cell phones and computer stuff and people contacting you. Then you've got your kids, which are very important to you, of course, and family. And people are just stimulated all the time, so it's difficult, but you've got to rest the mind. Verse 30 of Mark chapter 6. The apostles gathered to Jesus, told him all these things, both what they had done and what they had taught. And Christ said to them, come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and rest for a while. This is very important when you're talking about discouragement, depression, the blues, the black dog, low days, gray days, low vitamin D days. You know the highest suicide rates are in places like, and this is at the top of the list, Greenland, hardly any sun, Finland, places like that. Ohio. Every time I go to Ohio, that place is cloudy. No wonder when I get there, the members look like they want to kill me. No, we've got great people there. But these things are true, very physical. I mean, there's a link there, definitely. It's rainy, gray skies, you get down pretty quick. That is a proven fact. Getting back to the time element, though, you need to rest. Men and women are different this way. So men, please listen up. Here we go. Get to hammer away now. You've got to understand, one, that women rest, recalibrate, rejuvenate differently than you do. You got the kids who would suck the energy out of anybody, including the Apostle Paul, Elijah, Daniel. You got a bunch of kids running around all day. You can say you know. No, you don't know, okay? You don't know. You think you know. A woman needs to recalibrate. Let her define that. If it's going out once or twice a week, having a cup of coffee with friends, let her do that. Not that you wouldn't, but I think men really need to pay attention to this. Some women maybe would love to join a gym. Maybe another woman would like to take an art class. Maybe another woman would like to learn an instrument. Women need to find whatever that mechanism is. It can help them enormously with the constant demands of children, of spouses, of just the constant day-to-day grind of trying to take care of everyone, keeping the house clean. Man, if you say to your wife, let me tell you, before God, I'm not joking here, and you got kids, and you say, what have you been doing all day? Because the house is a little bit messy. Don't go there. There's a God in heaven, and you will answer to him. That woman in your life is under your charge. You're to make sure she gets rest. Jesus Christ made sure his disciples got rest. Now, I know people joke about this. Men just don't fully understand, but if the house is a little bit messy or her hair's all out of place or whatever the thing, it doesn't matter. She needs rest. She needs to recalibrate. And I don't think I'm looking at a congregation of lonely, depressed women. I don't mean to imply that, but I mean our women are hardworking and attentive women. Whatever that is, let her define it. She likes to go shopping, she likes to go shopping. People are different. They're going to recalibrate in a different way. She's going to be a more responsive wife. She's going to have more energy for you and the children. And you have to be sensitive to that because God looks at how you deal with your household. I'm not saying you don't do that. I'm just saying it is very easy for men to lose track of that very quickly. They get so busy. They come home. They're tired. They're just thinking about, well, this, we got to do this. How come this hasn't been done? And very easy to fail to realize that men have different ways of recalibrating. Sometimes a woman can judge a man. If he likes watching, you know, baseball, he loves watching baseball on TV, and maybe he does watch a little bit too much, but just understand, he will recalibrate differently than you. It may not be a total waste of time. He's got to recalibrate the way he recalibrates. People are different. You can take a look at that handout that I gave of Winston Churchill. He painted. I don't know any men here who paint. That's how he recalibrated. Very important to disengage. It may be a game. It may be going out and tinkering on something out in the garage. It could be a favorite television program. It all is different, but people need a mental break. So important. Even your children need. You know with children, they're all going to be a little bit different. And what gives them pleasure and enjoyment is that interesting location where we go with the human mind that gives us rest. It is so important. It is so important if we want to deal with this stressful life. So I know you love your spouse, but let me just throw a few punches here. Men, you have to be more in tune with this. And ladies, just understand, if a man likes chasing a little white ball around the golf course, let him do it. I remember a lady saying to me very annoyed, what's so wrong with a man? He wants to chase a little white ball around a golf course. What's wrong with him? She's talking about her husband. Well, you know, if that works for him, let him do it. And I know you can appreciate what I'm saying here. But Jesus Christ is very sensitive. Remember, he's aware of Elijah and Elijah's need to rest and recalibrate. He was aware of his disciples. And if you're in the midst of a lot of stress in your life right now, go to God, ask him for rest. Say, I need rest. Maybe you won't be delivered from the trial immediately, but God will give you rest within that storm where you can kind of catch your breath. You can get your sleep, so to speak, however you do that, because we're all different. Churchill painted, Dwight Eisenhower loved golf. Abraham Lincoln, who had a great sense of humor, and he would have people over in the evening and tell jokes and make comments. He had self-deprecating humor, and he was very effective at it. You know, some people relax socially. Franklin Delano Roosevelt loved to have people over at the end of the day. He didn't want his wife, Eleanor, with the group. At the end of the day, he didn't want Eleanor there. You know why? Because he wanted to joke, have a few drinks, tells a few crude stories. I'm not advocating that. He wanted to relax with his friends. She was so serious that when she was in the room, she would always steer the conversation of the group to some serious issue of the day. It was the end of the day. He didn't want to be serious. He wanted to relax. He wanted to tell jokes with his friends and laugh. The presidency was a very high-stress job. So he found a way, you know, to not have her there. It's funny because people are just different. People just rest in different ways. Some people, it's a lot of laughter and fun. Other people, it may be reading a book. I've said enough about that. I think you understand we're all different, but this is a very important concept. It may seem trite. It's not going to solve all the depression issues in the world, but it's important. Rest. Mental rest. I mean, it can mean physical rest, but a lot of it is mental and emotional rest. Let's go to another point, which is greatly underestimated. But you see it in 1 Kings 19, but you also see it in 2 Corinthians 7 and verse 6. It's very important to develop, to have a good friend or two. I realize not everybody needs this. Sometimes there are marriages, they just have a very good, intact relationship with their spouse. A lot of very happily married people who have other friends outside of the marriage. But as a general rule, people need friendship. It's part of staying mentally healthy. A woman needs female friends. It's very important because it's just the way women talk with one another. It's just different than the way they talk with a man. It's just different. It is very good for a man to have a male friend or buddy. My dad had a friend. The guy was an ex-Marine. And he was a little bit younger than my father, and they used to go out once a week. They'd have a beer or two at a local pub. They'd talk and tell jokes and laugh and talk about their wives. But that was important. It was part of being mentally healthy. I have no idea what your social life is. I'm not trying to imply you're not allowing your spouse to have friends, but it's just important to understand some of the process here. 2 Corinthians 7. Verse 6, very simple. This is important. Verse 6, nevertheless, God who comforts the downcast, he wants to be known as the person who comforts the downcast. Remember that when you're down. Bring it in front of him. Remind him. He wants to be reminded. I'm down. I'm troubled. I'm overwhelmed. Extreme low energy. Ugh, the blues, the black dog. Comfort me. You told me you're the God who comforts the downcast. He comforted us by the coming of Titus. You'll see this again with Timothy. Timothy was a great comfort to Paul. Paul deeply needed Timothy, who was like a son. People need people. After Loma died, Herbert Armstrong would play hearts with people, and Aaron Dean would tell the story. You know, Aaron Dean had a wife, and he would have to go home. And he couldn't necessarily stay every night to be with Mr. Armstrong. Mr. Armstrong would get very lonely. I have a lady I know, she attends the Prophecy Bible Studies, worked for Herbert Armstrong many years ago. She was telling me all about him, and she said we'd go on these trips, and he loved going on the trips and talking about the trips. And she said to me, but you could tell at night he was very, very lonely. He was a very lonely man. You know, that was after Loma died. Very difficult when she died. Some people battle loneliness differently than others. Some loneliness is not an issue. Maybe it's the job that's making them depressed, or could be a broken marriage. You know, we are different people. So men allow, and of course you do, but understand it is important for a woman to have at least one good female friend. So maybe they talk about the marriage a little bit. So what? Really? Oops. It's okay. I remember my mother used to tell me this all the time, and I saw it in the ministry, but she said, Steve, if you ever get married, a woman needs to vent. She needs to express herself. She needs to be heard. You don't have to agree. She needs to vent. I'm not advocating nagging, but women are different. Just remember that. A man needs a good buddy. Now, they may do things. Men tend not to talk as much. They'll talk and rib each other, but they may go to a sporting event. Or one person will go over to the other person's house, and, you know, after he comes home, the wife says, what'd you talk about? I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? You just spent 4 hours with Jim. Well, we watched the football game. because that's maybe what you do together when you're with a man. You're not verbalizing a lot. You talk about a few things, and you watch the football game, right? And yeah, the 49ers stink this year. Yeah, I can't stand it. Unbelievable. Reminds me of my boss. And they'll talk a little bit about that. These are little things that are very important in life. Sometimes you need to ask God to bring somebody into your life who can strengthen and encourage you. Friendship is very important to God. Jesus Christ had the disciples. Remember, he was close to John. I don't mean it was a wrong type of favoritism, but John leaned upon Christ's breast. There was a closeness there. David and Jonathan had a closeness. Elijah, I think, eventually became close with Elisha, and maybe a little bit of a different way. Paul and Timothy were close. Paul and Titus were close. Ruth was able to give that sense of closeness to Naomi. You see these dynamics, which are often taken for granted. God will often use a friend to help bring you out of, you know, those stagnant moments. Remember what we read in 1 Kings 19, that God gave Elijah a new goal, a new task, something to do. Sometimes you need to ask God. I tend to respond more in this area. If there's something I can really get my mind focused on, it helps bring me out of that depression or the discouragement. And he gave Elijah a new task, something to throw his mental energies into. God can give you that. You have to ask for it. And God can open the door and you do something and you think, yes, I want to do that. There's a sense of achievement, accomplishment. I'm doing something. A man may find that in his job. That's why some men, you know, get so focused on their job. That isn't totally wrong. They have to be careful. They don't want to ignore the family. But sometimes a man will find that more in his job. Understand that God can give you a new goal, a fresh goal. For a woman, it may be something else. It could be more in the relationship area, a new friendship. All of a sudden, she's closer to one of her kids more than she has ever been closer. As they get older, there's all these different ways that God works. That's very, very important, all of these things. Very quickly, and then I'll leave the rest for part two. There is something that only God can give that you're not going to get from a human relationship or a friendship. You can have a new job, a new task, a new thing to accomplish. But sometimes, and often, I should say, we just need that deep strength in the inner man. God has given us a spirit, but you have to ask for that strength. It may be boldness. It may be courage. It's interesting that God gave David, I think, an extra measure of courage. He had to fight hand to hand. He fought Goliath. There's a very courageous individual here. Killed Philistines hand to hand, probably hundreds of them. Paul, if you take a look at Paul, constantly was asking for boldness because as he did the work in his day, you know, he'd be put in prison. They'd beat him up. He was a human being. At times he would get scared. You can see that when he goes to the very big, chaotic, violent, crazy city of Corinth. He needed boldness. Sometimes you ask for boldness because you're in a situation or a context with family or work. You need boldness, kind of a strength, a confidence. But you have to ask for it. And God gave that repeatedly to Paul, but he had to constantly ask for it. Maybe you need calmness. Maybe you need more joy. Maybe you need clarity in just how to handle problems or more wisdom. God gives us these things, but you have to ask. You have to go again and again and again. So the timid become courageous. And those who shrink back become more bold. And those who don't have wisdom all of a sudden have wisdom. And those who suffer with a lingering sadness because of what has happened to them in their lives, all of a sudden there's kind of an energy and a joy, but you have to go to him. I think we're often lacking in this in the church. Let's go to Ephesians 3. Ephesians 3, in the church, we put a lot of focus on God deliver me from this situation with my boss, or I have this particular problem or context, get me out of it. I'm not saying those prayers are wrong. There's so much to be said where God simply strengthens the inner man. And there's great power there, but within this subject, you got to work at it. You got to pray, sometimes even fast about it. It's not a one prayer, you snap the fingers and all of a sudden you're brave all the time, or you're bold all the time, Or all of a sudden you're joyous, more joyous. You have to work at it, but it's well worth working at. I'll go into more detail next time. This is a wonderful passage in verse 16 of Ephesians 3. It says, that he, God, would grant you according to the riches of his glory to be strengthened with might through his Spirit in the inner man. This is really at the core of getting out of deep depression. God gives you strength. Now, maybe he opens a door, maybe he brings a friend into your life. All these things are important. You learn to schedule your life to get a bit of mental rest, but there's something about that inner man, boldness, courage, wisdom, a level-headedness where you're not like some people. They're up, down, up, down, up, down. They don't mean to be that way, but there's different factors because they're that way. But you can pray for that steady spirit. It can come. These are the great changes, but you have to pray for it. One of Mr. Armstrong's favorite scriptures, and I'm getting to the close here, is found in Isaiah chapter 40. Let's go to Isaiah 40. Just go again and again. Recognize there's a need or a lack. Address it and say, I need help here. This is what Paul did. I'm sure David did it. In verse 29, Mr. Armstrong would quote this again and again, especially in the latter years. Wonderful passage. This is the way God is, but you have to engage him repeatedly. You've got to be serious about it. Not one or two prayers about the subject. And then you've got to work on the weakness with your own human effort as well. But it's God's power that will work. Verse 29 of Isaiah 40. He gives power to the weak. He means what he says. This is just as accurate and reliable as the Sabbath is the seventh day of the week. Just as reliable. But you have to engage God. You have to ask for it. And to those who have no might, he increases strength. Depression, ultimately, at its core, is lack of strength. Mentally, you're just depleted. You're exhausted. You're overwhelmed. Emotionally, you're maybe devastated. It doesn't mean you're a horrible human being. It just means that we're human. We need to be strengthened. Even the youths shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But those who wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength, and they shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint. This is what God's Spirit can do to you. It takes time. It may not come immediately within a 24-hour period of time, but you go to him again and again. You draw closer to him. You ask specifically, but you have to ask. Don't assume that it'll just automatically be there. You have to ask, and then it comes. That's why God says, if you really want wisdom, ask for it. If you want boldness, as Paul wanted it, he asked repeatedly. Other people needed courage. Other people needed to be able to finesse their way in certain situations, like Daniel, who worked with a bunch of Gentiles. It was a very difficult context. Ruth needed strength. Esther was a very strong woman, dealing with the life and death of a whole people, a holocaust of that day. That woman was very wise. She went to God in prayer with fasting. A lot of good examples of women in the Bible who went to God. But there are qualities and a level of strength I'm not going to replicate through my own human effort. I can do little things. They're important. Human effort is important, but you're just going to fall short. You need God's Spirit, more of it. You need more of God's Spirit. It's not a criticism. It's just a reality for all of us. That comes through more contact, more consistent contact. Why don't we close with Hebrews? Let's go to Hebrews chapter 4. Hebrews chapter 4, when you're discouraged and down or circumstances are overwhelming you and you know your spirit is almost broken or you feel crushed, go to Hebrews chapter 4. This is very practical, dynamic. Remember in verse 15, we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses. We're weak. We're just human. We're weak. Things may be going well, and you feel good, and there's confidence there. That's not wrong. Lose your job. You're not going to be maybe as confident as you were. get a phone call and find out that a loved one died in a car accident, oh, you're pretty shaky pretty quick. It doesn't take much for humans to become incredibly weak very quickly. I don't boast in any strengths anymore. I might have a few tiny little ones here and there. I don't have confidence in them. Human beings are weak. We need strength. I need that closeness. I need his spirit, but I need to maintain that constant contact with him. He was tempted in all points, but without sin. So let us therefore come boldly to his throne with our discouragement, with our downcast spirit, with our depression. Pour it out before him. It is a throne of grace that he will help you. He will strengthen you. Give it time. But the process can begin now, and the mind changes. He has the ability to change your mind. He can bring wisdom where there was not wisdom. He can bring in a steady spirit where there was not a steadiness of spirit. He can bring in a joy where there was not a joy. But you have to go boldly. Don't go timidly. Don't go occasionally. Do it often with boldness. Remember to tell him he is the God of comfort. He is the one who strengthens, that you may obtain mercy. In this case, you want to heal that wounded spirit. You want to strengthen that crushed spirit, to obtain mercy and to find grace to help in time of need. God's a wonderful God. He can teach us so much as we go through the process, but he's definitely not one who wants to see you constantly in a state of discouragement and depression. That is not his will. It's not his calling for you. But you have to engage him. You have to look to him. You have to pour out your mind and your spirit to him. And you have to be very diligent in doing that. That's why prayer and Bible study is so important. So remember, give your spouse the opportunity to rest in the way they rest. Friendships are more important than you realize. God will use friendships. Be strengthened in the inner man. Remember, Satan is always there to discourage. Just understand you're in the middle of a battle. And we'll talk about that battle in the next installment of this very important subject. Don't let, with God's help, the black dog stay in your room. It doesn't have to be there day after day, week after week, and month after month. God's far too powerful, and it is not his will that you live over a constant cloud of sadness, discouragement, and despair.